My name is Austin Huber. I'm 16 years old. Today is November 22nd, and I'm speaking with my grandfather, James Huber. We are in Lincoln City, Oregon. Well, Grandpa, can you tell me anything about your parents? I haven't really heard much on them.
Yes, my father was the youngest of 13. He was the youngest child of 13 kids. His father came from Switzerland, and we almost think it was like he took a child bride. It was some sort of old thing they did, because she was maybe 15 when my father's mother married, and she was from a German settlement in Pennsylvania. Their farm actually was taken over by the northern end of the Philadelphia airport. And so anyway, he was the youngest son. The guy was rather old, but in fact he had brothers that had kids that were his age. But when my father was seven, he was supposed to go to school, first grade, and his father kept him out of school. He was dying, and he wanted to spend the time with his youngest son, and my father kind of always regretted that. Then my mother was born to Harry and Sally Clark, and she was one of two.
Well, did your mother have... What's your fondest memory with your mother?
I do like it. And he's doing exactly the way he's supposed to be. I laughed because it was her chasing me around our field with a switch, yelling at me, calmly really, not yelling, but yelling because she had to get her voice to project far enough to where I was running to get away from her with the switch. She says, "I can run longer than you. You'll eventually tire, so you might as well stop, because I'm not going to stop running until I catch you." And I knew she was telling the truth. She couldn't run as fast as me, but she could run longer. Oh, man. When I was four, my mother rented a rowboat, and we went out in Long Island Sound, and I had my two cousins with me, Arlene and Arnold, and they were older, and they didn't want to be out in the Long Island Sound, and I didn't want to go in. I liked water. I didn't know I liked water, but I've always liked water, and I don't know particulars because I was only four, but it seems like I went overboard because I didn't want to go in. My mother had to dive in and get me without spilling the rowboat, which I years later, when I became a lifeguard, found out that that's impossible to do. But she did it, and she went down in the murky water, found me, pulled me up. Next thing I know, I was waking up in one of my cousin's bedroom. Apparently drowned and been brought back.
Your cousins, I haven't heard much on them. Could you describe them a bit, please?
Cousins are a strange thing. You have, because my father was one of 13, they and many of them, some of them didn't have any kids at all, but many had large families also, five, six kids. Many only had two or three, but it made for a lot of cousins. And we would have family reunions once a year, and then maybe gather together for my grandmother's, who we called Lester Grandma, because she lived in Lester. Birthday. And we'd get together from time to time during the year, once in a while, with just small groups. But when that clan would gather, the cousins would run in packs of age groups. I was the youngest in my age group, and there was, they were boys or girls, with cousins that didn't seem to, it was mostly boys in our age group. There was one girl, Lonnie June. She was the closest one to my age. She was just a year older than I was. And then there was another one that was at the top end that once in a while would run. But the cousins would run all over, and we used to go out. It was mostly the boys. We'd go out and do adventures and play on rope swings, or go up into an old cornfield and play a sort of hide and go seek tag, where you had to pull off an ear of corn, and if you hear somebody coming, you'd throw it and see if they said ouch, you knew you got them. Run all over the woods and play games and stuff. And then my younger brother was in another group, and then there was another group that was older. They were more like young adults. We were teenagers and other kids. But there's something about cousins. I mean, I can remember sleeping in our living room in a small house, and I must have had seven or eight cousins sleeping in the living room, because the adults had the bedrooms, and the kids were just sleeping on the floor. And we had done that many times. We were sort of like halfway between a brother sister. It was something very close to it, the way our relationships were. Sometimes you were closer to a cousin that was closer in your age than you were. That was always why I was one of the reasons why I was hoping to get you back east, because you have a cousin that's exactly your age. You're very, within a couple months, one way or the other, of your age. She's in the same grade in school.
Would you say that your mother, like when she chased you with the switch, would you say that she did that with a lot of kids around, or just with you?
It was just me and her. They were out in the field. I don't know what I'd done wrong, but I didn't think she was. Well, I knew I was the one that was wrong. I'd done something wrong. I didn't in any way think what she was doing was a bit wrong or bad. It was me that was the culprit.
What was your day-to-day like when you were a child?
Well, from age, always. Because I was always near woods, and I was always running in the woods, chopping down trees, making spears, making bow and arrows, throwing hatchets, throwing bowie knives, throwing spears, making rope swings. And I was playing in the woods, you know, doing stuff. My parents both worked, so in the summer, I just ran through the woods and played, made tree forts.
Could you tell me a story of how great-grandma and great-grandpa had met?
Yeah. That's interesting. Although, probably not for you. But I think, well, World War II was just starting. And she was living in a school, a place called Upper Darby, or Darby, I don't know which it was. But they had this big high school with thousands of kids in it. And some of the older boys had gone off to war already. I think she was 16, and one of her boyfriend was maybe 18 or 17, and he went off to war, and he asked her to marry him before they went, and she said, "No, I'm only 16, and I'll marry you when you get back," and he got killed in the war. Perry, I think, was his name. And then after that, they had this big public swimming pool called Springfield Swimming Pool. It was the biggest public swimming pool I'd ever seen. It was still there around when I was a kid. We'd go there from time to time, but she was there. And he apparently was there. He was 5 years older than her. She was still in high school, but she was probably like 17 then, and probably a junior. And they met somehow. I don't know. I can't remember exactly. It just the way people meet. He knew somebody in the group that she was with, and he started kidding around with her, and eventually started dating her. And then I think he was scheduled to go off to war, and he asked my mother to marry him, and she was almost through high school, but she married him anyway. And then she went back and finished high school. And even though she was married, she finished high school. And then he did sort of, he went to a base somewhere, I don't know, West Virginia or somewhere. And because he was a farm boy and knew how to shoot, and they had all these city boys that had never seen a rifle, they made him the rifle instructor while they were waiting to get this group together to send them all over to Europe to fight in World War II. And they were scheduled to leave within days. And this one guy apparently froze on an automatic rifle, and it was going off, and my father had to go in and take it off him because he was the instructor. Everybody else was running, and he got shot in the head, just grazed a little bit, but it, you know, drew blood and probably gave him a concussion. And they put a bandage and maybe a few stitches and sent him back, but he couldn't go with his group to Europe, so he didn't go off that time. And then he became a supply sergeant, setting up his troops with the next group that he was supposed to go with, and then the war was over just before they were shipped out, so he never went overseas. I don't know if, I think I got lost on that story. I forgot what you asked me.
I had asked you, how did great-grandpa and great-grandma meet?
Oh,
but
okay.
That was a great story on the war.
Yeah, that's all part of it.
Yeah.
He then almost got shipped over to the at the Korean War.
Can you tell me when you found out you were going to be a mother or father? Or father, not mother. I was like, wait. You can tell me when you were, how you felt when you were going to be a father.
Well, I can remember being excited about being a father even before I'd had sex with anybody, but I was just dating them. You know, I was thinking about being a father, and so I've always, for some reason, been excited about being a father. But I guess I was a lifeguard and a swimming instructor and a pool director. You know, worked my way up the ladder to. But while I was doing that, I would have anywhere near. I would be playing games with kids all summer long, and coaching them and playing games and. Keeping so I just always liked kids, so I was very excited when I knew that I was going to start to be a father.
Do you remember when you first saw Grandma?
Yeah.
Can you describe how it was a bit?
We bumped into each other in church. She, you know, I didn't know her. She didn't know me. We were just two people that were going to this church that it was actually a Tuesday night meeting in First Presbyterian Church in Wilmington, Delaware. And I bumped into her, and I couldn't remember her name. But I just called her Almond Eyes. Every time I'd see her, I'd say, "Hey, little Almond Eyes." And she was a lot younger than I was. And I just saw her as another kid running, a teenager running around. But I couldn't remember her name for some reason, so I'd call her Almond Eyes. How we met.
When Dad was younger, how was he growing up?
Well, I've probably told you this story before, but it's my favorite story. He was in kindergarten, and he was the biggest kid. In the kindergarten, this was the biggest kid, and he was a rather fun. He loved to run and play and do things, whatever it was. He would go at it full force. But I can remember one time we were playing a game of. Miniature golf on the front lawn, and he had this golf ball that was a little bigger than ours, and a golf club that was much bigger than ours. We were using just a regular golf club, and we were playing just chip and putt. It'd take, you know, just a little hit. And he would come at it. In fact, somebody must have seen him hitting a golf ball when they made Slappy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore.
Because he runs in and he would whack it, even if it was a three putt. It wouldn't matter. We couldn't get him. He had one stroke. It was full force, and it hit the ball 90 feet. Even if it was only a 3 foot putt that he had to make, he couldn't. But he didn't care. He was having fun. He was wagging. We'd all play regular golf and okay, it's your turn, or Mark, and he'd come and he'd just run at the ball and whack it, just like Happy Gilmore. But my favorite story we just started with when he was in kindergarten. That was actually before kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
But he really didn't have any childhood memories of his mother. She didn't really, you know, she took care of him when he was a baby, but when he was two, she sort of just dumped him and didn't pay much attention to him. So he was kind of always looking for a mother figure. So I get into a pair of teachers at the kindergarten, and the teacher is saying, oh, Mark is wonderful, he gets straight A's, he's doing really good. And she says, there's just one problem. If somebody comes and sits in a seat that Mark was sitting in before he got up, and he wants to sit there, he doesn't bother to say anything to them. He just picks them up and moves them. And then sits down. And she says, he's bigger and stronger than everybody else. But he doesn't hurt them or anything. And she, the whole time she's telling me this story, she's smiling and almost laughing. So, then I realized after talking to Mark about the teacher, he was looking for her as a mother thing, and she was a young woman just out of college, probably engaged but not married yet, wanting to have children. So the two of them, the woman looking for children and the kid looking for a mom figure, found each other, and they were having a mother-child love affair. You know, it was nothing bad, obviously. Oh, but I had to have a talk to your father, and I think I did right. But it was usually a talk a mother gives to a son, and I told him that God had given him great strength, but he could only use it to help people, to help people who were smaller or the weak, and he couldn't use it for his own gain.
Well, I remember hearing you and Dad say that I looked a lot like Dad when he was a kid. Did Dad kind of have the same physical build and looking like you when you were a kid?
Mm-mm. No. No, I was as skinny as a rail. I mean, really skinny. So it was. I mean, it wasn't just. I wasn't normal. I was thinner than normal. It was, you know, the doctors were worried I had a iron deficiency and a vitamin C deficiency, and I couldn't hardly eat anything. I was like a string bean, as tall, you know, as tall as he was growing up, but I wasn't as beefy.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I'm not saying fat, strong, one of the, you know, the build.
Yeah. Would you say the worst memory you have of my father is?
Well, he's talking about children. I'll stick with my worst memory of him. We were down in Ocean City, New Jersey on the 4th of July week. I thought I was being real smart by making our holiday on the 4th of July week, because then we got a few extra days. But that, because they got holiday pay and other things. But it was so crowded, it wasn't funny. And especially on 4th of July, I'd never seen such crowds. But it, we'll pause.
Hi.
Where were we?
You were talking about the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, it was the biggest crowd I've ever been in, except maybe when it was at a peace protest in Washington, D.C. during the 60s. But anyway, it was really crowded on the boardwalk. The boardwalk was 14 miles long, and it was just bumper to bumper people everywhere. And traveling around, trying to keep five kids in tow, but yet all kinds of things going on, fireworks, rides, arcades, things to eat. We're on vacation, we're trying to all have fun. And he was starting to walk out in front, and I don't know, we stopped and he kept going, and we lost him, and I was panicking. That's my worst memory, because I was fearful, you know. There was probably close to 1 million people there, and I'd lost him, and I must have been looking for 2 hours, and doing systematic grids and parking all the other kids at one spot and say, okay, don't go anywhere, we're going up this way, if you get him, hang on to him. And never really found him. And then I'm walking along, going up this one way for probably the fourth time to see if I can find him, and all of a sudden he's just walking next to me laughing. That's rather fancy, Callie. Oh, sorry. Let's see. All right. What do we... Oh, and I know the little bugger was testing his limits. He never admitted, but he ran away on purpose. But then he was mad at me because I didn't recognize that he was walking next to him. But that was my worst move.
Do you think how Dad acted when he was a kid kind of reflects on how me and Callie act nowadays? Like, do we act similarly to how he acted, or?
Well, I had to think on that one for a little bit. But my first response is no, because his circumstances were so different than yours. He was the youngest of five, and really had to survive. You know, all the others thought he got more attention, and he thought all his brothers and sisters got all the attention, and he didn't get any. So his circumstances were different, but I have a feeling there were some similarities. I'm going to have to come back to that and think about it for a while.
Yeah. Would you say there were any songs that were really important to him back when he was a kid?
Probably was, but right now I can't remember any of them. But again, the way my mind works, something will lay in there.
Yeah.
We had a lot of family songs, but your dad sort of had his own individual tastes.
Well, can you tell me of any fond of your fondest memory of me as a kid?
The first thing that popped into my head was we used to go shopping. This was before, when you're just starting to learn your alphabet and a little bit of words, but you really weren't reading yet. You really weren't putting words together. And you and I were buds. We'd go everywhere together. And whenever we go to the grocery store, I always had a lot of quarters, so I put a pocket full of quarters in there, in my pocket, and I'd say, every time you find a word anywhere in the store that you can read, you call me over and I'll read it to me, and I'll give you a quarter. This was great because you were running all around the store trying to find words. Rather quickly, it got old because you'd remember where the words were that you read the time before, and you'd add on to it, and you got very good at it. And you got very good at figuring out words. I mean, it was neat watching you learn, but you learned so fast that I couldn't keep up with you with quarters, so I had to stop that. But it was a lot of fun watching your mind work and how good you were at figuring out tricks and schemes and shortcuts to get to the victory.
What's your fondest memory of Callie when she was younger than she is currently?
Better not be that mud bath that I took when I was little.
I think my favorite memory is our times of going to meet the school bus.
Oh, that was so much fun.
To meet you getting off the school bus. And every day, Callie would have a different outfit.
Yeah.
She might be a cowgirl one day. She might be a pussycat the next day, a princess the next day. Who knows what? She might mix and match outfits, but it was always a different outfit, and that was always a big deal. And you'd get off the bus and you'd have this look on your face, oh God, what's she wearing today? No. And Callie would run up to you and throw her arms around you and give you a big hug, and you'd be standing there, oh, why do I gotta adore this? And all the little girls on the school bus would have their faces pressed against the window to see what outfit Callie would have on that day. And then she started breaking for the... She started using that as a diversion because she figured all she had to do was get in that school bus and she'd go to school. And she wanted to go to school. She figured there was good stuff going on there. And then I'll take that to what I call Callie's first day of school. And it was preschool. And your father and I, and either Bill or Stefan went with us. And Callie got dressed up, but in absolutely looking like a schoolgirl. We were just going to register, but she packed a lunch. She had everything ready to go. She was going to school. She knew how Austin did it. She was going to school. She wasn't paying any attention to what we were telling her. We're just going to register. we get there, and we park the car. We're looking across the parking lot. All of a sudden, Callie opens the door and starts running towards the school, saying, bye, I'll see you later, I'm going to school. And we were floored by it. We got out real quick and tried to get her. And the person that greeted her just before she was going in the door to the school was the head teacher, the head of the school. and Callie just hit it off with her. When we got in there, we found out that you had to pre-register in order to, you had to be on a waiting list to get in, and there was 18 people ahead of the waiting list. If we put our name on it now to get in school, which was starting in a week. And man, Callie was disappointed. But we put her name down and went away. And somehow it opened up. I have a feeling because she met that teacher and that became her teacher. And they hit it off really well. And her being the head of the school, she says, I want that girl. She wants to learn.
Well, I remember that me and Callie used to sing a lot together and solo when we were kids. And I was curious which one of those were kind of your favorite part of that.
Well, I remember, as soon as you start talking about that, I remember the house that JJ moved to. It's behind the water department that we lived in.
Yeah.
For some reason, the stairwell was you guys' favorite place. You'd slide down cardboard, or if you didn't have cardboard, you'd use something else.
A bed.
Yeah, whatever. But the two of you, I came across the two of you sitting on the steps, singing in harmony, and saying, can you hear the, you know, and you were listening, it was sort of a sound chamber that you guys had discovered, and you were playing with your voices, and I thought, because sisters and sisters, brothers and brothers, there's something in their voices that it blends closer. They harmonize with each other better. There's been a lot of famous brothers and sisters, or sisters or brothers, singing groups over the years. The most famous one was the Van Trumps, and they're up in Portland. Still sing the third generation of that family, but you guys were experimenting with it, the harmonizing, and I'd noticed something in both your voices that but I didn't understand it. I told you about it, but then when you were on your own playing with sound and harmony and echoes, I thought that was really interesting.
Well, using what I had just brought up, did your family songs or something like that come up with Bad Santa songs?
See, I think he was in the rapper.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of the other kids grabbed onto rock and roll type songs that were from my generation, or remixes of them, but he was sort of the first one that was into rap. So, and I had a mental block against rap, which your father eventually was able to break through. He found this movie and made me watch it. And at the very end, there was a rocker from my generation playing, and it blended into this rap, and I finally, for a few minutes, understood rap.
Back then, wasn't it kind of around when Eminem was still new to the rapping era? The film you're talking about kind of made me think of the movie Eminem was in. I can't remember what it is called, but yeah.
That was it.
Or he was called, like, Little Rabbit or something like that. I remember Dad showing me those kind of movies when I was... Is it?
No, not the movie. But in the movie, he was called White Boy.
He was called White Boy and Little Rabbit. The Little Bunny or something
never
like that.
Never nothing like that.
But I remember Dad used to show me those movies a lot. Would you say there were any songs that kind of stuck with you through your childhood that you might remember?
I don't understand the question.
Is there any songs that you would listen to or your mother or father had sung to you when you were a kid that might have stuck with you through childhood to adulthood?
Well, my parents were from the big band era. And they had a lot of these old 78 records. And I would listen to the records, and I thought there was one that was called Celery Stalks at Midnight. It had all these funny names for songs. And I started liking their music because that was all there was, you know. But I found, one day I found this song called the Guitar Boogie Shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
It had it on an old 78. And I'd play it over and over again. And whenever any of my cousins would come by or any of my friends, I'd play it for them. I'd say, "You hear this? You hear it? There's something there." And what it was is I heard rock and roll. I heard the beat of rock and roll coming. Because when the big band and all that, there were some hints of rock and roll. And I heard it and I go, "There's something there, I know it, this is really," and the record, my brother, I think, stepped on it or something, and there was a crack all the way across the record, halfway across from the hole to the outside, and I would play it anyway. I'd have to listen to it because I'd say, "Listen to that," I go, "The record's cracked," and I go, "I don't care, listen to the music," and it almost kept the beat.
Well, I don't think we have enough time for another story or a memory, but that was a fun interview. Thank you, Grandpa. Love you.
It was fun for me. I'm so impressed with the maturity of your questions.
Thanks.